Welcome to Embracing Continuous Behaviour Change for Anger Management, the podcast that helps you to calm your emotions and communicate effectively. I'm your host, Claire Broadley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on calming your emotions and living a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to master your emotions. Good evening. It's evening here anyway, and I have got a guest, Sandra Panton. Panton? How do you pronounce that?
Panton, you had it right.
Ah, thank you. Who is joining me from Connecticut in the US. So thank you so much for joining us, Sandra.
Thank you for having me.
Please, could you tell our listeners all about yourself? Because you can probably introduce yourself far better than I ever would.
Well, yes. I'm a certified master life coach. I originally started out in natural health, working with clients successfully for the years. It organically integrated that 50% of the discussions we would have would be around their mindset. So it doesn't matter the condition they had. And then looking at the research, we see that they're, especially post-COVID, they're confidently making connections between mindset, stress, and any physical ailment, right? So I then pivoted through a couple circumstances, COVID and all of those things, pivoted to teaching adolescents because adolescents were going through serious mental health crisis, right? Being on lockdown. And even prior to that, they were having a lot of challenges. So I took all of my training. And I was also doing corporate training, doing stress management, resiliency, those types of trainings, whatever the client needed. So I took all of that curriculum, made a curriculum for the adolescents, and then started teaching it online. So since just kind of the inception of all of COVID coming on the scene, I've been teaching online and focusing on the same thing, stress management, social stress and peer pressure, time management. Learning how to learn, all of those complexities, dealing with challenges they have with their parents, with siblings, with you name the situations, we would go through those discussions. So at this point, I think last tally, I had positively impacted learners and families in over 22 countries.
Wow.
To the tune of thousands of families.
Congratulations. That's no mean feat.
Yes. So, and it's just, I love the light bulb moments of when the parents will come to me and say, I've been trying to have that conversation with my child for how long? And you in one conversation, 45 minutes or less, you're able to turn on the light bulbs that now they're coming to tell me what they're going to do. And I'm looking at them because I've been trying to get this across to them for years. And you come with a conversation. But I think it's a matter of a lot of times, whether it's an adolescent or not, a lot of times we just need to hear it from another voice, right? Yes. So our spouse or sibling or somebody may be telling us something, but when we hear it from that other person, now we're able to kind of receive that in a different way. So that's kind of how I focus my days now, is that's my greatest joy, is being able to help kind of reconcile the conflict resolutions, just giving understanding of when a parent says, A, the child hears Z, right?
Yes.
And expectations are not level set. It's just miscommunication.
And that's it with a lot of things. As you say, it's about how we hear things as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
I could be saying a particular sentence to you, and you might be hearing something completely different. And then some random other person comes into our life who says exactly the same thing, but suddenly we're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
And I guess it depends how much we want to hear what's being said as well.
It depends on, I think, and when I look at my story, a fun little story, when I was coming up as an adolescent, because I was born in London, right, just outside of London. So I remember I left there when I was about 11. But prior to that, I remember my siblings and I being in the car with my dad, and we had a tumultuous relationship.
Okay.
And someone was asking my dad, one of his friends, they turned and looked at us and said, well, what do you think they're going to grow up to be? They're so amazing. What do you think they're going to do? And my dad mentioned career choices for my brother, for my sister. I think he said she's going to be a nurse. And for me, he said she's going to be a teacher. And we got out the car and we looked at each other and said, well, now we know at least what we're not going to do.
Yeah. Right. The complete opposite.
So sometimes we're resistant just because of who it's coming from, because we don't want to give them the satisfaction to align with them. So sometimes what is being said is not bad, but we just need to hear it from another voice.
Because, absolutely.
Right. It's just so many different dynamics that go into those things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had picked up on that accent as well. And then you said it and I thought, ha ha, I was right. So you mentioned about the relationship with your dad, and when we have been speaking via Messenger on the run-up to this, one of the things that you said is that your childhood and the environment, etc., in which you grew up. So tell us a bit about your background and that environment, and how has that... You said it made you feel unstable and unsafe. So how did that impact on you? What was happening there?
My parents got divorced. I was told when I was about a toddler. I don't ever remember my mother growing up, because being in England, it was more of who could give a more stable environment per the courts, right? It wasn't necessarily that you automatically go to the mom. And because my dad was more stable financially, supposedly, as it seemed on the outside, that, and my mom, and he was very highly educated because he was an engineer and had a great job. And my mom hadn't gotten a high school diploma, but she was working, I think, in a hospital or something, doing non-professional type work. My dad and her were, if you've ever seen the movie War of the Roses, you know, that was kind of my parents. And it was always just toxic, screaming, physical. It was just a very unsafe. Children that come up in an environment where there is a lot of conflict feel very unsafe. They don't know how to communicate, find their voice. It's just so many different dynamics. Even if it's not targeted at them, even though it was targeted at us. But, you know, just for parents to know, even though the child may hear it, they may feel it, they still feel unsafe, right?
Yeah.
And then because my dad was on a mission to not give my mom any satisfaction of being able to be the one that shows up with all the goodies, because she didn't raise us, so she was able to put money aside and would come and show up like, you know, Santa Claus, so to speak, with all the goodies, whatever she came twice a year, he would move us. So I can't remember staying in a home or in a neighborhood for more than a couple years at a time. And that is very unstable into a child.
It's almost like you become the weapon, don't you?
Exactly.
The weapon to beat the other parent.
Exactly. And a lot of time parents are not noticing that when you're squabbling and screaming and arguing with the other person, it's not necessarily that you're wrong in what you want, but the way that you're doing it, and because the kids are collateral damage. And then a lot of times... parents will say to the child, oh, your mother's good for nothing, or this is what they did, and dad's going to say the same thing. And then this child is like a deer in headlights in the middle, because I'm half of my mom and half of my dad. So when you're screaming at them, you're screaming at me, because I identify with them, right? So it was just very confusing. And my go-to emotion, and I say a lot of times, and I like to get across, is that anger is just a shield.
Yes,
so when you see that anger come up, and a lot of times we take it personally because of our own issues, but that person's just screaming, acting out because they're scared, because they feel insecure, because they're getting flashbacks to the most insecure time of their life. Yeah. And if we can see it differently, then we can respond to it differently.
Yeah.
So I just, for as far back as I can remember, just had no stability. And it was that you go into survival and self-preservation mode. So it was always me trying to protect me from the outside world. And even though I had siblings, it we had no adult there that was grooming us, was coaching us, was encouraging us, was believing in us. It was always what we did, no matter what we did, was never good enough. There was always a criticism, right? No matter.
Yeah.
You know, we used to joke that our parents used to walk through with a white glove. I don't know if you've ever seen the movies where they come through the white glove, they look for a spot. You know, that's kind of the image that we have coming up, because no matter how much we did, they would always find that one little bit. They would never say, oh my gosh, you did 80%, or good job doing this, just pick up this little bit or do this little extra.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you did. You got an 89 on a test. Why didn't you get more? You got a 99. What one did you miss?
Yeah.
So we grew up always feeling those we were never enough. And
so how did that?
Go ahead.
You mentioned your anger and you mentioned that as a shield. So how did that anger manifest? How would it come out? How would it act for you?
I would be angry. I would lash out. I would, I was just very quick with the tongue.
Yeah.
So you would say anything. I would always say that if you looked at me kind of crooked, I always had a quick, sarcastic, cutting response. I was very, and I used to think of it in a prideful way as though, you know, you said something to me. I didn't need to physically do anything. I could kind of cut you down with my words because I was very well kind of educated, if you will, so I could use words in a way that would, you know, I'd like to say make kind of grown people cry, right?
Yeah.
And that was something that in me, I didn't see that as a negative. And when I became older and I started doing my work and studying and learning more, I looked back in my past and I was heartbroken at the amount of people that I hurt, right? Mm-hmm. Because every word is either building or it's cutting down. And I used to love to cut people down if they, any perceived slight, because I was protecting that little girl, that child, because I couldn't speak up to my parents. So I'm going to speak up to everybody else, right?
Yeah. And that's kind of how it's such a shame, isn't it? You think back to that poor little girl inside you who was absolutely almost like fighting the dragon, wasn't she? With a little sword, and her tongue was her sword, and there she is fighting away. Yeah. What a shame. Was there any time in your childhood where it got so intense that you thought, you know, this needs to stop? Or at what point did you think, actually, my anger and my words, etc., are hurting me? Or did you ever think that? Did you realize where they were coming from?
Not until I was an adult.
Okay.
So I never did get that mindset, that wisdom as a child. Because even what's modeled around us are angry people. Hurt people hurt people, right? So around me, everything I saw was, you know, kind of you're modeling what you've seen, how to model, right? So somebody's angry, somebody says something, then this is how you handle it, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what we see rippling through the world. People modeling kind of what they've grown up to be their norm. But it wasn't until I came to the United States, I was in maybe my second job here, and a friend came to me one day and said, I need you to read this book. And it was Scott Peck's book, The Road Less Traveled.
Okay.
And it talked about the damage of parenting, you know, and this is never to accuse the parents, because my parents parented the way they were parented.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is intergenerational, right?
Yeah.
So, but at some point we have to acknowledge it so that we can change it. We can't change what we don't acknowledge, right?
Yeah.
So he gave me the book and it was talking about how the way that I was conducting myself was evidence of where I'd come from. And I read that book and my light bulb went on.
Yeah.
And I said, so I don't have to be angry. I don't have to be like this. This is just my response to my stress. And if I could acknowledge that and I can take steps to have a different response, So it's not that you'll never be stressed or have an opportunity, but how I respond to it can be completely different. So I read that book, absorbed it like a sponge. And then there was a Further Along the Road Less Traveled, which was the follow-up book. And that started me on a whole pathway of self kind of understanding, self-acceptance, self-love, empathy, understanding. And it took quite some time because that trauma went to my core. Mm. So it was not a matter of, something that was 6 weeks or less, right? Decades of growth by growth. And over time, I can look back and see, based on the mirror of the people that I was around and how they engaged me, I could see my growth.
Yes.
So even when I, kind of went to church and I was in church, they used to give me names like Xena Warrior Princess, because you take no prisoners. You take no prisoners, right? So I'm like, even though I'm in the church for several years, by how they engaged me, I could see that I was still reacting in ways. And that led me to say, okay, you need to keep going. Until I got to the point that people who knew me then say, who are you? Because you used to, and you would normally, how come you let that person? And so now I know, okay, now I've crested and I'm coming over to the other side, because I don't want to be recognizable to the person that I was in that way, in how I handled my emotions.
And as you said, that was you, wasn't it? That was you through to the core, because you know better. That's how you've been brought up. And as you said, how your parents were parented, et cetera, et cetera. So how did it feel when you realized that you were moving from self-blame and carrying all of that, and you were becoming self-compassionate? How did that, and I'm presuming that absolutely lifted you, and I'm presuming that put a huge smile on your face.
Yes, it was, words fail. It just felt surreal. Like when you've known something for so long and you've just accepted it as being normal. And now you see that there's another path, there's another option. In the beginning, you don't trust it, right? Yeah. So even though you may dabble a little bit, you're expecting the kickback, you're expecting the rejection, you're expecting all that you used to get. But then you realize that not only, they say the best way to learn something is to teach it, right? Mm-hmm. So now I teach it. And even as I teach it, I'm still learning. It's still healing me with every person that I get to speak with. And I think that's one of the reasons that I've been so successful, is because I still get it, right? Because a lot of times as adults, we forget what it was like to be a child, right? Yeah. And you can't bridge that gap and let people you're kind of stick in one camp. Mm. But I'm able to, because it's still kind of fresh, right? And I want it to always be fresh so that I'm always relatable.
Yeah.
Now I just feel so light. You have your days, right? It's not like
absolutely,
right? Nothing
to those sunset. Days. Yes.
But more often than not, I can still myself. I can feel what I feel and not need to speak, right? Yeah. And I process it completely differently. But my way of kind of really being consistent in that growth is to teach, is to help others in whatever way they need it.
And I absolutely agree with what you're saying. To teach and to have that knowledge that's a lived experience, and to be able to sit with somebody and you can almost not have to speak because you know exactly how they're feeling, and without having to say anything, they know you get it.
Yeah.
So already that you've broken so many barriers, haven't you?
Yeah.
Then another professional that comes in who hasn't ever experienced any of this.
Exactly.
He's got the clipboard and pen and he's now going to sit down and judge you.
Yeah, it's textbook more than it's heartfelt, right? So you have those that do it as kind of a career because that's what they chose, which is great. But then you have those of us who came up by trial and fire, who said, okay, now that I'm kind of the other end, I want to make sure as few people as possible have to go through this, right? Or if they go through it, if I had had someone, even one person who saw me or invested in me emotionally, it has nothing to do with money. It's like, do you care enough? Do you see me? Do you hear me? You know? And if I had had, then I wouldn't have needed to go, I like to say, up the rough side of the mountain. I could have taken a, you know, like a pathway.
An easier cut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how, when you see someone or are faced with someone who is acting out their emotion, so they're acting out in an angry way, how do you approach them? Because I'm thinking you would approach them and their anger in a completely different way to anybody who hasn't been there, worn that hat and got the t-shirt and written the book.
Not the t-shirt. Well, it's not a one and done, right? So you kind of go with your intuition. So there are some, like you said, you're just going to be quiet with, and they don't need to necessarily to fix anything in that moment. They just need to know that you see me and you're here.
Yeah.
There are those that, you know, kind of need you to talk them through and just give voice to what's in there, what's inside them. So you can kind of ask those questions or kind of say, okay, what's happening? Tell me what you're feeling. What do you see? You know, kind of things. And then there are those that need, you know, more guidance. Okay, so did you see it this way? Or how about you look at it from this perspective or consider this? Did you add this? So it's different, depends on the individual. But I always want to ensure that everyone knows that there is nothing wrong with anger. Anger is just human emotion. And if we don't have anger, then I would say that we're kidding ourselves, because all of us have anger. It's just if we so suppress it, then we're in serious danger of when that, I like to say it's like a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
When that thing can't take any more pressure, how you're going to express that one last straw that broke the camel's back, as the saying goes, it's going to be extreme. And the fallout from that is going to be unnecessary. Yeah. So we want people, I want you to tell me, don't shy that you're angry. I want you to tell me what you're feeling. If you're angry, you're frustrated, whatever the situation is, I want you to feel it. I want you to feel, what does that feel like in you? Do you notice that that's springing a nervous habit, or you getting the headaches? You know, what can you associate that with? Because the more that you can give voice to, the more your brain is going to be programmed to start recognizing the signs before they come on full force. And now you can put in that pause to say, okay, I feel my voice or hitting that pitch or my tension in the shoulders or that feeling in the pit of my stomach. And now your brain is going to more rapidly fire and give you opportunity to pause or to ask yourself the question, why does that person make me feel this way? Or what's going on here? Why am I in X, Y, or Z? And it just gives you back your power.
Yeah.
Like angry because we feel disempowered.
And it's really important what you said there, and that is something. So I do workshops and I'll go into colleges and universities, and the very first thing I say is, let's get this straight. Everybody gets angry. Let's get it straight. Let's not pretend nobody's better than anybody else. We all have anger. It's an emotion.
Yeah.
But it's an emotion that masks all the other emotions because it's how we communicate them.
Yes.
So with that in mind, how do you think society views anger?
It puts a bad label on it. It doesn't see it as an opportunity for empathy and understanding, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
They see it as an opportunity to judge and demonize and kind of put themselves on a pedestal. Because if I can point fingers at you and say, oh, you're angry, something's wrong with you, I've now put you beneath me. Right. As though I never get angry or I'm better able to control myself it's a status thing. But when we can understand and take it as when that person, I don't care if it's your child, your parents, your spouse, your sibling, your boss, your coworker, it doesn't matter. We're all just humans. When you can acknowledge, okay, that person's angry, don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
That person is expressing what's going on in them. And the fact that they're showing that way feels that they feel something's out of control, right? Mm. They're feeling some negative emotion. You just happen to be there to experience it. So we want to just be able to train society, step back, you know, pause, look at it and say, okay, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. But we have to disconnect our personal emotions to be able to take that step.
So I'm a retired police officer, and I also, for my sins, and I also worked with men who were abusive in their relationships, so a domestic abuse. And so part of my role was to help them change their behaviour. So I used to use NLP to help them change their behaviour. And what I found a lot of the time was the men that were sat in front of me, and I'd never ever want to take away from the harm that they did. They were being abusive, and I don't want ever want to say that was good. It wasn't. But a lot of the times, the men that were sat in front of me were men who had been abused as children, who had gone through domestic abuse, who'd gone through a lot of trauma. And again, I'm not giving it any excuse, but is that how their trauma was coming out? Because they didn't know how to express it, because they've been put in a man box of, you don't cry, you don't say anything.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and my family was no different, right? We had all of the emotional, physical, financial, you know, kind of trauma and abuse going on. And it's repeated because it becomes our language.
Yeah, right?
Like some people speak English or Spanish, it just becomes your language. You don't know anything different. And even for myself, I say, even though I've grown, I am still, you know, it took me a long time to be able to come to terms with. And there are people that I've had to go back to and apologize to, you know, that were still kind of in where I could connect with them and apologize for my behavior, making it clear, as you said, I don't condone what you did. Don't get it, you know, kind of twisted that because I'm apologizing means it's okay what you did to me.
Yeah.
What I'm apologizing for is my response to it.
Yeah.
And so that I can continue to grow in my process and my emotional maturity, I've got to know doing harm to other people is not acceptable. Right.
Absolutely.
So those men that went through that, kind of the same thing, right? And every time that they hurt their supposed loved one, it didn't make them feel good about themselves.
No.
It actually made them feel worse, which is going to make them do it even worse next time, because now they're looking for a way to get out of this self-condemnation, right? To get that. It's like, it's a vice. You know, some do drugs or sex or, you know, whatever it is, it's just another vice. So this is how they kind of get kind of that release in that moment, because I'm feeling so trapped, so out of control, so inept, so... You know, usually if it's in that type of situation, they feel as though they're failing in some way.
Yeah.
And they're being judged. And therefore, they're going to look to bash the thing that's judging them because they never had that conversation with their parents to be able to say, express how they feel. So now that spouse or that person takes the place of that parent.
Yeah.
And now they feel more emboldened to have those interactions and those confrontations. Right. But we need to be able to get them back to the root. And no, there's nothing wrong with anger. The way that you're expressing your anger, now that's what we're going to work on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're always going to have kind of an opportunity, but we want to work on how you express your emotions, not the fact that we're trying to get you to act like they don't exist.
Absolutely. Do you think, so we talked about judgment a few minutes ago, and I was talking to somebody else this morning about judgment and saying how I would absolutely love to knock down the walls that people, you know, they put themselves on a pedestal of being so much better and higher than everybody else. And you know, everybody's had a sin, let's put it that way. And do you think we will ever get to a place where we won't have that judgment so that people, maybe that's a stupid question, Claire, but... Do you think there'll ever be that point where people can just come forward without fear of being judged?
That will be on an individual level. It will, because it takes the individuals to create the homes, to create the societies, to create the towns, to create the countries, right? So on a global level, no. Because nobody's going to want to take that first step and say, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, be the one at risk and risk everybody judging me or, you know, going through. No, but this is why we do what we do, because we go to the root level, right? We go to the center of the nucleus and we say, okay, I want to work with that man, that child, that woman, that employee, that boss who doesn't know how to communicate or finds he's not getting the responses. Because a lot of times bosses may feel, okay, I'm showing up, I'm being nice, there's a smile on my face, but why am I getting this response and not making the connection of where that miscommunication is, right?
Yeah.
So we work on those levels so that when the individual changes, one person changes, your entire network changes because your whole ripple effect changes, right? So we don't need to focus on getting the group. We get the group if we get like a strategic one.
One, yeah.
A strategic one.
We get the models.
Yeah. So we can see a change if enough people are willing to be vulnerable. And this is kind of why I focus on adolescents, not just because that was
out of
my space, but if we can change kind of the parent-adolescent connection, and even if they don't have a connection with the parent because of whatever situation is going on, that they must still be able to come up resilient and able to live a life of impact and purpose. Because if we do not find a way to reach this generation and next generation, society is lost.
Yeah.
I always tell people, who do you think is going to have the hand hovering over the buttons, right? Who's going to be given the order, go and don't go, right? This is this generation that's falling through the cracks. So we need to be long. I like to say, play the long game. It is not optional that we don't reach this generation, this current generation of adolescents and the one coming up, because they are the ones, when you're older and you need services, they're not going to care, right?
Yeah.
So when you need what you're going to need and you're looking for support and family, if we are not connected with our family now, they're not going to be there for us when we're older.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many older generations that I'm now seeing personally that, and hearing the personal stories that of one dad was on his deathbed in a nursing home because the son wanted nothing to do with him. And, you know, the deathbed feeling like, okay, I've got to make amends for things. Put a word out for his son. Son never showed up. He said, I have no desire to have no contact with him. I have other people that have multiple kids and clearly favored one child over the other. So now that person is in need of the family support of the kids. The ones that were not favored says, oh, you need to go speak to your favorite child. Too late now, right? And that other child is not necessarily showing up the way that they need them to show up.
Yeah.
So we're not doing it as a means to an end, but we want to understand that if you don't do it, what is the potential cost?
Yeah.
Cost to you personally and your family, and the cost to the society in which you're going to be in 20 years when these kids come of term and are in control.
Yeah. It's scary. So what's next for you then on your journey and your growth and in business?
Well, I will continue to do what I do, right? I have, because I focus kind of primarily in the States and time zones, differences, and, limited ability to connect with, enough people. That's why I put out my book that's available on Amazon. And so it's Dynamic Parenting 2.0, How to Help Your Child Navigate from Adolescence to Adulthood. And I've just last week created and launched my parenting course. So parents around the globe can take the course for a nominal fee and get as though you've had a 12-month coaching sessions with me, right? So we cover all the tough topics, all of those things. And if they need to connect with me and ask me unique questions that maybe they feel they need to tweak out, then that availability is there. So I just want to reach as many. I've done thousands. I want to get that into the tens of thousands of households that I've been able to impact, because every person you impact, no matter what, they will never be the same. Even if they change just one thing, right? One thing, then the equation has to change, right?
Yeah.
Has to change. Yeah. So enough people that are doing work, bumping up against enough people doing exercise, a little more empathy, a little more understanding, even if it's in hindsight.
Yeah.
Instead of validating how we responded to each other, in hindsight and justifying it, we can now say, oh, that wasn't nice, or, you know, I need to go clean that up, or, you know, yeah, I'm going to do it differently the next time, just to have those conversations in the head. We've got to reach as many, many, many people as possible.
Absolutely.
If we don't, I'm scared of the cost if we don't.
Yeah. Come on, Sandra, let's go and change the world.
I'm with you.
You do it your side, I'll do it my side. So where can people get your book?
They can get it on Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon.com, right? And they can just look up, because I have a number of books on there, so they can, I'm going to be adding a few more. So they can just look me up by name, so they could see everything. So just type in Sandra Panton, and it'll bring up the books. And at any point, they may hear this, whatever other books have been added to the lineup at that point, because I just want to put out as much as possible to help as many as possible. So I actually also have created some vision boarding books with just like pictures and stuff for them, because if we have no vision, and a lot of times you're working with kids, they what are your dreams? What, you know, do you have any?
Yeah.
Right? They have nothing. At least when we were coming out, we wanted to be every career known to man. You know, every month we changed what we wanted to do, right? So we had that starry-eyed thing no matter what we were going through. But I'm talking to thousands of kids and asking them, what do you want to do? I have no idea.
Wow.
Who do you want to be? It's just like what's around me at that moment. They don't really have any hope. And a generation that feel unseen, unheard, and have no hope, that's a dangerous combination.
Very sad as well. Very sad.
Yeah.
So will you send me your links and I will put them in the description for the podcast. And then the listeners can get hold of you, get hold of your book, get on your course. Excellent. Send you lots of love wherever you are, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. Yes. Sandra, it's been an absolute pleasure. I have thoroughly enjoyed our chat. Thank you so much for opening up your world to us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. As long as we help, I always say, because when I teach class, I say most teachers will say if there aren't a certain minimum number of students, then class doesn't happen. I tell kids, if one of you show up, then we were meant to have an encounter. So I will teach one student that shows up at that moment because you're in China or someplace and that's the only time you can make it, or whatever situation. So as long as we reach one, I like the multiplication, but my goal is if I can see that one person was encouraged to know that there's another way, they don't have to walk in that anger. It doesn't have to be their identity, right? Yeah. They know that they could be the version of themselves that they're scared to be, because they don't know how the world's going to accept them. And, you know, we can help them get there.
I love that. I think you're an absolutely amazing lady. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy listening to the episode and learn some tips on how to manage your emotions in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and do remember, you have the power to calm your emotions and communicate effectively.